It's so sad, Latimer. Betrayals, hatred, violence, shocking twists, lies.
Have you been watching Game of Thrones again, Mum?
Oh no, that was brilliant. I'm talking about British politics. I'm so bloody sick of it all. Let's go away somewhere, back to a time before there were career politicians.
That was a very long time ago, Mum. And of course, before then, there was feudalism.
I'm not sure that ever really went away. Further back then, before human beings were being horrible to each other.
Ah, a very, very long time ago.
Yes, I want to go back to that time, but after the dinosaurs, and the Ice Age, and before misogyny.
I think there is one afternoon that might suit. I'll warm up the time machine.
Could it be somewhere with nice trees?
Yes, Mum.
But not too many bugs?
Yes, Mum.
And not too hot either?
Very good, Mum.
And Latimer?
Yes, Mum?
Can we please not have anything horrible happen? I'm not sure my nerves could take it.
I'll see what I can do, Mum.
Tea and Jeopardy with Emma Newman. There's always time for a nice cup of tea and a spot of mild peril. Well, hello there, my lovelies. I do hope you're well and haven't had your country represented by a of the highest order on the international stage. I'm Emma Newman, and I'd like to welcome you into my secret tea lair for polite conversation, abject geekery, a cheeky bit of cake, and of course, a nice cup of tea. Well, this oak forest is exactly what I needed. The clearing is just large enough to let in the perfect amount of sunlight for our tea table. And we've brought lots of cushions with us, so you can make yourselves comfortable. The air is so fresh and clean, and I can't remember the last time I enjoyed birdsong without the background noise of cars, planes, and political rage. Such bliss.
I'm sorry to disturb you, Mum, but your guest has arrived. A Mr. James Oswald.
Ah, splendid. Let's see his calling card. James Oswald, words and stuff.
It's always the stuff you have to worry about, Mum. It's a very broad term.
Well, being a farmer, I'm sure it's a euphemism for all the foul-smelling things he has to deal with. Send him in, then.
Very good, Mum.
For those of you who don't know, James Oswald is the author of the epic fantasy series, The Ballad of Sir Benfro, and the Inspector MacLean crime series. The latest book, The Damage Done, has been shortlisted for the Scottish Crime Book of the Year, which is nice.
Mr. James Oswald, Mum.
Hello, James. Do come and sit down. How are you?
I'm very well. Hello. Thank you.
And would you care for a cup of tea?
I would love a cup of tea, yes, thank you very much.
Marvellous, and how do you take it?
Just white, just a little bit of milk.
Marvellous. I'll pour. And I was wondering if you would like some Eton mess. I thought it would be appropriate today.
I think we've probably got quite enough Eton mess at the moment. I might just pass on that one, thank you.
I prefer this type of Eton mess immeasurably.
Absolutely, yes.
Now, being a farmer, I'm sure you won't mind the chickens over there. They won't bother you at all. But I just wanted to check you're not allergic to feathers or anything like that.
Not the last time I wore any, no, certainly.
Good. Do you wear feathers often, James?
That would be so. That would probably be telling too much, really.
I do like a nice feather boa on a chap every now and again.
Or, you know, one or two in the hair.
Oh, yes, yes, very much so. Yes, and more men should wear eyeliner and lipstick. I've come round to this of late due to being exposed to many beautiful men wearing eyeliner and lipstick, and it really does work brilliantly.
As long as it's on the eyes and the lips, yes, I think that, elsewhere it doesn't work quite so well.
Now, in my invitation, I asked you to bring a curio with you. What have you decided to bring today?
Well, I brought this tiny little Highland cow. As you can see, it's very, very small. It just fits in the palm of your hand. And if you stroke it gently, it will moo very, very quietly.
That's adorable.
They are ridiculously fluffy animals, it has to be said. And people think that they're fierce with their horns, but they're not. You couldn't look at a face like that and be scared.
No, but they are very big. That's the thing I always forget about cows until I go near them and I realise just how huge they are.
Apart from this one, obviously, yes, the real ones are our bull Fergus is about a ton in weight, so yes, he's a big lad.
Oh my goodness! Do you?
But he's soft and fluffy and as gentle as a kitten, really, just a 1-ton kitten with horns.
Do you get nervous about being stepped on when you're around them or not?
I don't get nervous about being stepped on. You do have to keep your wits about you, though. I remember when I first decided I wanted to have Highland cattle, and I went to a meeting of the Highland Cattle Society, and I was introduced to a whole load of breeders and other Highland cattle farmers. And every single one of them either had a cane or walked with a limp. And I thought, what am I getting myself into here? And I did just last week, dealing with one of them, I wasn't paying attention, and she turned her head to see what I was doing, and I got caught by a horn in the arm, and I've got quite a nice multicoloured bruise on my arm, which I won't show you, because that would be unseemly. But yes, you do have to keep your wits about you. They won't tend to charge you down, but if you're standing close and they move their heads, those horns can move pretty quickly.
Mm. Now, I may have misremembered this, but am I right in thinking that you once lived and worked in London and then you just up sticks and moved to Northeast Fife to start a farm?
Well, it wasn't quite like that, no. I worked in London. I was born not far from London. My father worked in the city there for a while. He was brought up on a farm. The original family farm was in the northeast of Scotland, right up in the north. But they had to sell the farm for reasons that are quite boring to go into. So he ended up going down to London and working in the city for 20 years, during which time I was born and brought up. And then he took all the money he made in the city and came back up to Scotland and bought another farm and farmed that for the last 25 years of his life. And then when he died, I took over.
Ah, that's so, where so I've got London in there.
Yes, well, I have indeed lived and worked in London, quite happy not to be doing that anymore.
Yes, so quite a big move, even though you're kind of you've returned to your family roots. What was it that drew you back?
Well, I've never really been a city person, and the farm that my father bought is just such a lovely place, such a beautiful part of the country, and we overlook the Tay Estuary, or the Firth of Tay. I think you usually call it the Tay Estuary. They call it the Firth of Forth and the Murray Firth and the Cromarty Firth, but the Tay Estuary, and I've never quite worked out why. But anyway, it's beautiful. It's tidal where we are, so it's constantly changing. And we've got this massive, great big sky to the north, so you can see the northern lights in the winter.
Oh, wow.
And it's just a beautiful, beautiful place that once you've come here, you'd never really want to leave.
So is it quite hard when you have to go off and do author things elsewhere in the world?
It's always a wrench, yes. Though it depends, actually, what time of year it is, because whilst it's beautiful and we've got that lovely open sky to the north, we're also open to the wind and the rain and the snow. So sometimes it's nice to go somewhere where there's sort of central heating and roofs.
Oh my goodness, you don't just live in this shack, do you, James? You're making it sound like you huddle in the shelter of some stone wall.
No. I did live for 5 years in a caravan, though, because when I took over the farm, I have two brothers and a sister, and everything was split four ways, and I couldn't afford to buy out my brothers and sister. So my younger brother wanted to live here anyway, so he got the farmhouse and some of the old stone buildings, and I got the land but no house. So I bought my plan of building a house and moved the caravan in a Dutch barn which opened on three sides, and I lived in that quite happily for 5 years whilst building the house.
Now, I saw a photo of you in an article where you were out in the fields with a tractor and your typewriter, which I thought was hilarious. It was like, oh yes, I will just drive out into the fields on my tractor and dash off a novel, which is kind of the impression I think they were hoping to give. What's the most bizarre thing you've ever been asked to do for publicity?
Well, my publicist asked me to do a bungee jump for publicity because he was also doing publicity for a company that does bungee jumps. And he thought that there was a good synergy there. And I had to tell him no, because I have a terrible head for heights anyway. But I have heard that one of the major injuries that people suffer from bungee jumping is detached retinas.
Yes.
I don't even need to know what that is. It sounds horrible.
It does.
So I said no. He did also wonder whether any of my cows were tame enough to ride. And bless him, he comes up with some great ideas, my publicist, but I have to, you know, sometimes dampen his enthusiasm.
I'm trying to work out how a picture or film of you riding a cow would convince the reading public to try one of your books.
I think it's probably just as realistic as sitting in the middle of a field with a laptop on my knees and the cows surrounding me. Though you never know when the muse will strike, you know.
Yes, do you take that typewriter with you every time you go out into the fields, just in case?
Yes, I have a specially adapted backpack that it lives in. That's my grandmother's old typewriter that doesn't work properly anymore. Half the letters don't work, so you have to be quite selective about what you write.
Oh, dear. Did you feel very silly when you had that picture taken, or was it just great fun?
That one wasn't too bad, actually. The funny one was they had me pose with an axe, and they'd sort of got some lights up from underneath to make my face in shadow, and I had my wide-brimmed, floppy-brimmed hat on, and the photographer says, look evil, look sinister, and so of course I just started giggling, because it just doesn't really work. If you tell someone to look sinister, it's not going to work.
No, it isn't until you have to do a photo shoot that's when you suddenly get an appreciation for how good actors are.
Mm.
They can do all of these things on cue, but I have exactly the same experience. If I'm asked to do anything which is not just smile awkwardly, it is just fits of laughter. Mm. There's no other state. I guess that was because you write crime, right? So axe murderer equals crime?
Yes, they want love the sort of sinister, you know, dark shadows and instruments of torture and things like that. And we did try it with the scythe, but that looked really silly. It's a big old scythe, rusty old wooden scythe that we found in the old steadings. But yeah, that just looked a bit too much. I really needed a black cape with a hood and just pretend to be death and speak in capital letters.
Yes, that's the only way forwards, really, isn't it? Is there anything about writing epic fantasy that makes it harder to write crime, or vice versa?
The thing that I find most, because epic fantasy is sort of slower world building and a broader scope, and the chapters, just on the basic physics of it, the chapters tend to be longer, whereas the crime writing is very short scenes and very snappy, punchy things happening quickly. And I do find making that transition from having finished writing a fantasy book, I suddenly find that my crime fiction is getting very descriptive and long, and I have to go back and whittle it right down to the bare minimum. And then when I finish writing a crime book and go back to a fantasy book, I have to sort of say, no, you can't just get away with two lines of description. You've got to give them a little bit more. Though I suspect there's room for that sort of, you know, that sort of fantasy fiction, which is really hard hitting and quick. I mean, a lot of the grimdark stuff is like that.
I know that they're completely different genres, different worlds, everything, but have you got any kind of secret crossovers between the two different series? You know, does the inspector have a dragon on his desk or anything like that?
Well, he doesn't directly have a dragon on his desk, but in the book that I'm writing at the moment, which is number 7 in the Inspector MacLean series, which is quite terrifying to think about, the first dead body they find, the one witness to his death says that a dragon dropped him from the sky, because they find this body up a tree in the middle of Edinburgh, and nobody can quite work out how it got there. And this little boy is convinced that it was a dragon coming to attack him. And throughout the book, it's never entirely sure whether he dreamt the whole thing or what. So I'm still trying to make up my mind whether it is actually a dragon. The problem is, if it is actually a dragon, then my editor will tell me to rewrite it. So
that's the thing I was going to ask, actually, is with crime, I've only written one kind of sci-fi crime, and I haven't written a series in the modern day. But I was wondering, you just said you haven't quite made up your mind. I was wondering how much of the actual crime and the progression through the investigation do you plan out in advance, or do you just kind of go through and build it as you go?
I do very much go through and build it as I go. I've tried planning, and I, what happens is I meticulously plan a story, at which point I'm bored with that story and I go and write a different one.
Yes.
So I'm quite lucky now, because I've been writing these characters for quite a long time. All I do, I set up a crime, and I was quite cruel to myself this time. I just said, they find a body in a tree on the meadows in the middle of Edinburgh. And how did it get there? Who is it? And I started asking all those questions of myself as what I was writing my investigation team, asking those same questions as well. So the whole thing is just a voyage of discovery for me as much as it is for my team of characters. And I think actually that's quite a good way to make the book fresh. You do obviously then, once you finished it, have to go back and do some heavy editing, because you'll change your mind halfway through that a character at the beginning who was a middle-aged woman would be much better if it was a young man, or vice versa. But it's worked for me so far. That's basically how I've written the last five of these books.
Mm.
And people keep on buying them, so must be doing something right.
So it's like an excavation.
Yes, it's a voyage of discovery. It's an investigation. I mean, I do exactly what my main character, Tony McLean, does. I follow the investigation through and occasionally throw really cruel things at me, you know, to trip me up on the way.
So you have an expert that you consult on police matters. I have a friend who is a doctor and surgeon who consults for Holby City.
Oh, right.
Do you have your kind of crime equivalent?
I have access to, but I very rarely use contacts with what was Lothian and Borders Police. It's all Police Scotland now, but basically the police in Edinburgh. My sister-in-law's brother works for Police Scotland. He does all their IT training, and he knows all of the detectives in the Edinburgh region. And if I've ever got a question, I can just pick up the phone and call him, and he'll ask someone and they'll call me back. But I very, very rarely do, because I'm not really interested in writing what they call police procedurals. I just use that as a very loose framework to hang my slightly supernatural stories onto. And so I don't really want to get too bogged down in that kind of detail. What tends to happen is if I find myself needing to know a particularly small piece of detailed piece of police procedure, that sets off a little alarm bell in my mind, and I go back and rewrite the scene so I don't need it, rather than bothering the police.
Ah, that's interesting. So is it like an indication to you that you've got too bogged down?
I think it is, yes. And it's an indication that I'm taking in the story in the wrong direction. It's not the sort of story that I'm trying to write. Also, I'm A, very, very lazy, and B, quite shy. So the thought of picking up the phone and talking to a police officer, or, you know, or going to the police station and sitting down and talking to a police officer, fills me with a kind of terrible, clammy-palmed dread. So I tend to avoid doing it as much as I can.
That's perfectly understandable.
Yeah. I did, funnily enough, when I wrote the first book and put it out as an ebook, self-published it, one of the first people who got in touch with me was a recently retired detective inspector from Lothian and Borders Police.
Oh, wow.
And I was terrified. I saw this email and it started off, I am a recently retired detective inspector from Lothian and Borders Police. And I thought, oh God, he's going to take me apart for all my lack of knowledge. And he said, I want to know who you based such and such a character on, because I think I know who it is.
And had you based it on someone?
No, absolutely not. I just made him up. He's an incompetent sort of middle senior manager, and it's just every civil service senior manager I'd ever worked under, all rolled into one. So, yeah, it's the books are much more about character than procedure, I think, and I think that's what people like about them.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I'm going to dip my toe, because I'm kind of knee deep in it at the moment anyway, but I'm going to dip my toe into current affairs and ask you, which three words would you use to describe the current situation in the UK?
Are there any children listening?
If you feel the need to swear, which I would find very, very understandable, then feel free.
And yes, no, it's a family show. I wouldn't really want to say. I think dog's breakfast. That's only two words, isn't it?
Yes.
Utter mess. It's just beggars belief how badly managed the whole thing has been. I try not to think too hard about it because I get angry and then I can't write.
Yes. And, you know, I've seen several of my friends in our community saying that. So it's that combination of rage and powerlessness, which is just so crippling.
And I'm not even particularly angry with the voters. You know, the outcome of the referendum was what it's going to be. What really, really angers me is the behaviour of our elected representatives, the politicians. I would like to take them all out and give them a jolly good kicking, because with a few notable exceptions, they've all behaved utterly execrably, like children, basically. And they're still behaving like children, and the country's going to the dogs. And I'd love to have a snap general election, because I think there'd be a lot of independent candidates who would all win.
Yes, yeah, I agree. So if you could choose any figure from fiction to come and lead the country instead of this bunch of reprobates, who would it be and why?
Well, I've seen a meme going around social media that Lord Vetinari was going to take over. And I think actually, yes, a benign dictator would do us just well. And I think Lord Vetinari would be perfect. Also, he would get all the MPs in one by one and give them the option of walking out of that door with the long drop beyond it. and I think that's the kind of person that we need to pick up the pieces.
Yes, yes, so many pieces. So, on to happier things, because, my goodness, we need them at the moment.
Every little happy thing we can have, I think, yes.
Yes, yes, we have to cup it in our hand like a flame and protect it against
like
the ill winds.
A tiny little Highland cow.
Yes, yes, a little fluffy Highland cow. So one of the ways to create a little bit of light in the darkness is to ask the chickens if they will sing. If you needed to have a theme tune to your life and could pick a song, which would it be?
Because Scotland is my family country, though I was actually born in England by an embarrassment of history. yes, I'd find Scotland the Brave to be such a moving anthem when you're working away or just going for a walk, and it's got that kind of that swing to it, that rhythm to it, sort of G's you up. And yes, I think Scotland the Brave would certainly be my anthem.
Yes, and I think it's actually so fitting at the moment as well. Brave and noble. And so I would like to ask you, little chickens, could you sing Scotland the Brave for James, please? And there they go.
Oh, aren't they doing it well? Yes. They're Scottish chickens. I didn't know you had Scottish chickens.
Well, you know, I'm wondering now, because they're singing that so damn well. Maybe it's because they feel more aligned with Scottish feelings at the moment than those in England. I'm not sure.
Well, they're welcome here anytime. They can come and peck around.
Can I come?
Absolutely, yes.
Thank you. I think that there may be quite a few people asking you if they can come and stay on your farm soon.
I have had one or two requests, yes.
Oh dear.
We've got plenty of space. Everyone's welcome.
Oh, good, good. Well, if all of your cows were as small as the one that's in your hand, it would be a lot better.
They'd be much easier to round up, I can tell you, yes.
So when's the next Inspector MacLean novel coming out?
Well, the paperback edition of the most recent one is coming out on the 14th of July, so very soon indeed.
Very soon.
And then the fifth and final Benfro book, The Obsidian Throne, is coming out in September the 22nd.
Busy year.
And then the book that I'm writing at the moment is due to be out in February next year, so I'd better get on with it.
And with the crime novels, do you have to read them in order, or can you pick up?
You can pick them up pretty much. I mean, they're each of them is an individual investigation. Obviously, the characters recur throughout, except for those who die in early ones. So there's some reference to characters or events in other books, but that's never pivotal to the story. I would always say yes. You know, if you're going to read them, buy the first one and then buy all the rest of them, and then buy copies for all your friends as well.
Steady on now.
But you don't have to read them in order. Many people don't. Quite a lot of people picked up the latest one. That was the first one they'd picked up. And it works quite well because it refers back to Tony McLean's first ever case as a serving police officer. So there's kind of a nice link to his past in there as well.
Wonderful. Well, let me just check the teapot. Oh, I'm afraid the teapot is empty.
Oh, that's a terrible shame. It was such lovely tea.
It is lovely tea, isn't it? I think the calming environment of oak trees and a distinct lack of politics is really helping make the tea taste better.
It goes down a treat. And I've even had a little bit of the mess. I hope you didn't mind.
No, not at all. I think this is the only way to cope, actually, is to eat this version.
Comfort eating, yes. Yes. It always helps.
Yes. So if you follow Latimer, he'll take you back over towards where the time machine is and we'll take you home to make sure that your farm is still cared for. And so all that leaves for me to do is to thank you for taking the time out of your very busy writing schedule to come and take tea with me today.
It's been an absolute delight. Thank you very much indeed.
Wonderful. And I'll hopefully see you sometime later in the year.
Absolutely. Look forward to
take it. Take care then. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
This way, sir.
Oh, that was lovely. I almost don't want to go back to the future. I feel like I could stay in this oak forest forever.
I'm not sure you do, Mum.
Why's that?
Because there aren't any hungry dragons in the future.
But there aren't any... Oh, no.
If it's any consolation, Mum, it seems like the dragon is only interested in Mr. Oswald.
Oh, its belly scales match the pink of James's famous jacket. Perhaps the dragon doesn't want to eat James.
I think the alternatives are far worse, Mum.
Oh, he's running back towards us. Perhaps James wants to give the dragon more than one morsel to choose from. James, why are you taking all of the cutlery? James!
Our silverware! How rude!
Why is he holding out a spoon like that? It's not a sword, James.
There are no stories about knights battling dragons with spoons for good reason.
Steady now. Calm down. Here's a bit of food for you. Nice teaspoon. Calm down. Is that nice? Yes.
I never knew that dragons ate silverware.
A true gentleman would never have put his own safety above that of his host's silverware.
Oh, don't be so silly, Latimer. We can get new cutlery, but we can't get a new James Oswald.
But, Mum, there are dozens of fantasy and crime authors.
Oh, Latimer, I think it's time for you to clear away the tea things.
There's not much left to clear up, Mum.
Whilst Latimer is distracted, would you indulge me? I'd just like to say that the fourth book of the Split World series, A Little Knowledge, will be out at the start of August, and I'm so very excited about the next part of the series being released after the unavoidable gap. You can find out more on splitworlds.com or my website www.enewman.co.uk.
You weren't doing anything promotional there, were you, Mum?
No, of course not. Find us a new location for the tea lair, Latimer. Somewhere quiet, with no dragons or politicians.
Very good, Mum.
You've just listened to an episode of Tea and Jeopardy, hosted by Emma Newman and co-written with Peter Newman. Go to www.teaandjeopardy.com to find previous episodes and www.patreon.com/teaandjeopardy to become a Bless Poppet.